The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome, everyone. It feels almost obvious now, doesn't it, that our sun is just one star, one tiny speck in the Milky Way, and our galaxy, well, it's just one among billions. But, you know, that understanding, that massive, humbling perspective, it's actually really, really recent, less than a century old. Today, we're diving deep into Eric Grauer's fantastic book, Galaxies. It's a brilliant guide, really makes extragalactic astronomy feel graspable. And our goal is pretty straightforward. We want to get why these enormous, beautiful structures, these galaxies, are so crucial. Why are they the engines driving cosmic evolution, collision, and, well, everything? Not just what they are, but why they matter.
Yeah, and getting into galaxies means facing something kind of mind-bending right away. Everything we actually see, the stars, the planets, the glowing gas, is just like the tip of the iceberg, a tiny fraction.
Just a sliver.
Exactly. Galaxies are where the really big mysteries, like dark matter and dark energy, actually shape things. They build the structure, mostly with stuff we can't even see.
Okay, let's maybe rewind a bit then. Start with the history, because our current view, totally different from, say, 100 years ago.
Oh, absolutely. Before the 1920s, the universe was basically thought to be just the Milky Way. That was it.
Seriously, the whole universe?
Yep, all those fuzzy patches in the sky. What we now know are entire other galaxies. People mostly thought they were just, you know, nearby clouds of gas, nebulae within our own galaxy.
Wow. So what changed that?
Well, there was this huge discussion called the Great Debate in 1920. You had Harlow Shapley saying these spiral nebulae were local inside the Milky Way.
Okay.
And Heberker is arguing, no, these are distant, separate island universes. The whole scale of creation was basically up for grabs.
So like a cosmic heavyweight fight, who landed the knockout punch?
That was Edwin Hubble in 1924. He used this brand new powerful telescope, the Hooker telescope.
Right.
And he pointed it at the Andromeda Nebula. But he wasn't just looking at fuzz. He was hunting for specific stars, Cepheid variables.
Ah, the blinking ones.
Exactly. And the key thing about Cepheids is their blinking speed, their pulsation period, is directly linked to how bright they actually are, their absolute magnitude.
Okay, so if you know how fast they blink,
you know their true wattage, basically.
Yeah.
Then you measure how dim they look from Earth, and bam, you can calculate the distance.
So what did Hubble find for Andromeda? Was it nearby?
Not even close. He calculated a distance that was just staggering, almost a million light years away.
A million light years?
Yeah. I mean, definitively outside the Milky Way.
So
completely separate.
So Curtis was right. Island universes.
Totally. It just blew the doors off our understanding of the cosmos overnight. Yeah. We weren't alone. We were just one galaxy in this vast, vast ocean of others.
Okay, so Hubble proved they exist, these other islands. But what are they actually made of? Let's dissect one. What are the core parts?
All right, let's look inside. You can think about the visible stuff and the invisible stuff.
Yeah.
The visible starts with, well, the obvious. Stars.
The bright lights.
The bright lights, sure. But they're also the chemical factories. They forge heavier elements inside, you know, the carbon, the oxygen, the iron that make up planets and us. Then they spread it around when they explode a supernovae.
So they enrich the galaxy.
Exactly. Then you've got the interstellar medium, the ISM. It's not empty space between stars. It's this mix of gas and dust.
The raw material.
Precisely. It's the stuff that collapses under gravity to form new stars. It's the fuel, the reservoir for future generations.
And then there's the monster in the middle, these supermassive black holes, SMBHs. It seems wild that pretty much every big galaxy has one, millions or billions of times the sun's mass. What are they doing there, just sucking things in?
Well, they do that, but their role is much bigger. They actually regulate the whole galaxy's growth.
Wow.
When gas falls into them, they flare up incredibly brightly as quasars. They give it like a huge burst of energy, a cosmic blowtorch. This outflow, this quasar wind, it blows gas outwards, away from the center. And that actually stops star formation for a while.
Whoa, wait. So the black hole feeding stops stars from forming elsewhere?
In a way, yeah. It pushes the fuel away. It prevents the galaxy from forming stars too quickly. It's this amazing feedback loop managing the whole system.
Incredible. A self-regulating system. But that's still just the stuff we can see. You mentioned the invisible part.
Right. And this is maybe the biggest piece of the puzzle. This comes from the work of Vera Rubin in the 70s. She was looking at how spiral galaxies rotate.
And what did she find? Something odd.
Something deeply odd. Stars way out on the edges were orbiting just as fast as stars near the center. The whole galaxy was spinning almost like a solid disk.
Mm, okay. Why is that odd?
Because if gravity only came from the visible stuff, the stars and gas we see, the outer stars should be moving much, much slower. Like planets in the solar system, the farther out, the slower they go. Kepler's laws, right?
Right. So if they're moving too fast based on the visible matter, what keeps them from just flying off into space?
There has to be something else there. Something massive, providing extra gravity, but something we can't see.
Ah, this is the dark matter halo.
Exactly. This huge, invisible sphere of, well, something, surrounding the entire visible galaxy, holding it together with its gravity.
And the proportion is crazy, right? Like, how much dark matter versus normal matter?
It's shocking. Dark matter outweighs all the stars, gas and dust, everything we see by about 5 to 1.
5 to 1. So, shouldn't we call it the dark matter core or something if it's the main component? Halo sounds almost secondary.
That's actually a really good point. It is the fundamental structure. Its gravity dictates the galaxy's shape, its rotation, everything. But we call it a halo because, well, we can only infer it's there from its gravitational effects on the visible stuff within it. We're mapping the building, but the scaffolding is invisible. It demands some intellectual humility, you know?
Definitely. Okay, so we have the components. What about the different types of galaxies you hear about? Spirals, ellipticals, Hubble's Galactic Zoo, right?
Like exactly. Hubble set up a classification, kind of like a tuning fork shape. The main types are spiral galaxies, like our Milky Way or Andromeda. They've got that central bulge and those beautiful winding arms in a disk.
And those arms aren't solid structures, are they? The book had a great analogy.
Right. They're density waves. Think of it like a traffic jam on a highway.
Okay.
The cars, the stars and gas move through the jam. But when the gas clouds hit that denser region, that slowdown area,
they pile up and compress.
Exactly. And that compression triggers star formation. That's why the arms are so bright and often blue. They're packed with hot, young, newborn stars. It's where the cosmic traffic jam sparks new life.
Cool analogy. Okay, what else is in the zoo?
Then you have elliptical galaxies. These are smoother, sort of featureless ovals or spheres. They're generally older, full of old, redder stars.
Less dramatic looking.
Yeah, and they have very little gas or dust left. So basically, no new star formation. They're often the result of major galaxy mergers in the past. Galactic pileups that used up all the gas.
The galactic retirement homes, almost.
Kind of. And finally, you have irregular galaxies. They don't fit the neat spiral or elliptical shape. They're often messy, chaotic.
What causes that?
Usually, it's because they're currently interacting gravitationally with another galaxy, or they've recently gone through a collision or a near miss. That tidal disruption messes up their structure.
Which leads us right into how galaxies evolve. They're not static paintings in the sky. They change, right? They grow.
Absolutely. The standard model is hierarchical formation. Small things form first, then merge to become bigger things over cosmic time. Galaxies grow mainly through mergers.
And sometimes it's not an equal merger, like galactic cannibalism.
Yep. That's the term. Larger galaxies pull in and consume smaller satellite galaxies. These mergers, big or small, often trigger intense bursts of star formation, starburst galaxies, because all that gas gets compressed.
So mergers are how spirals might eventually become ellipticals.
That's the leading theory. Two big spirals collide, their disks get destroyed, the gas gets used up in a starburst, and eventually they settle down into one big, smooth elliptical galaxy.
And that brings us unsettlingly close to home. Our own Milky Way and Andromeda. They're on a collision course, aren't they?
They are indeed. Gravity is pulling them together. It's not like stars will physically crash into each other. Space is mostly empty, but the galaxies themselves will merge.
Forming what? Milkomeda?
Milkomeda, yeah. That's the nickname for the giant elliptical galaxy that will result.
And when is this cosmic fender bender scheduled?
Don't cancel your plans for next week. It's about 4.5 billion years from now.
Okay, phew. Still, 4.5 billion years. Thinking on that time scale really does shift your perspective.
It really does. Deep time.
So if we zoom out even further now, galaxies aren't just scattered randomly, are they? They hang out together.
That's right. They're quite social. They clump together gravitationally into clusters, groups of dozens to thousands of galaxies. Our own local group is pretty small. But nearby, you have the huge Virgo cluster.
And clusters group together, too.
Yep, into superclusters. These are massive chains and collections of clusters. Our local group is part of the Lanikea supercluster, which is just immense.
And zooming out one more time, what's the biggest structure of all?
That's the cosmic web. Imagine the universe on the largest scales.
Yeah.
It's not uniform. It looks like a giant sponge or network.
A web.
A web, exactly. Long, thin filaments of galaxies and dark matter connect at dense nodes, which is where the big clusters live. And surrounding these filaments and nodes are enormous, almost empty regions called cosmic voids.
And this whole web structure, it traces the dark matter.
Essentially, yes. Tiny fluctuations in density right after the Big Bang, mostly in dark matter, acted as gravitational seeds. Normal matter fell into those denser regions over billions of years, lighting up the underlying dark matter scaffolding, revealing the web.
Mind-boggling. But there's one more piece to this cosmic puzzle, isn't there? The real wild card.
Ah, yes. The final and maybe the weirdest ingredient. Dark energy.
What prompted its discovery?
In 1998, astronomers were studying distant supernovae to measure how much the universe's expansion was slowing down due to gravity.
Makes sense. Gravity should pull things back together.
Except they found the opposite. The expansion wasn't slowing down. It was accelerating, speeding up over time.
Wait, accelerating? How? What's pushing everything apart faster and faster?
That's the billion-dollar question. We call the cause dark energy. It seems to be some kind of energy inherent in space-time itself, acting like an anti-gravity, pushing things apart.
Something fundamental to space itself.
Possibly. And the really crazy part is how much of it there is. Dark energy makes up about 70% of the total energy density of the universe.
70%. So add that to the dark matter. What was it, 25%?
Around that, yeah. Which means everything we know, stars, planets, gas, all the normal matter, that's only about 5% of the universe.
Whoa, just 5%? We're barely a rounding error.
Pretty much. We live in a universe dominated by two things we can't see and don't fundamentally understand.
And this dark energy, it determines the ultimate fate of the universe.
It seems so. Because it's accelerating the expansion, eventually galaxies and clusters outside our own local gravitationally bound group will be pushed away faster and faster.
Faster than light.
Effectively, yes. The space between us and them will expand so fast that their light will never reach us again. They'll recede beyond our cosmic horizon, disappearing from view forever.
Leaving our future Milkomeda galaxy alone.
Essentially isolated in an ever-expanding, darkening universe. A rather sobering thought.
Definitely. Okay, so we've journeyed from the great debate to the cosmic web and dark energy. Let's bring it back. What are the key takeaways here? What does learning about galaxies really give us, practically speaking?
Well, first, I think it's that realization about the 95% unseen universe, dark matter, dark energy. That fosters a real sense of intellectual humility.
How so?
Just knowing how much we don't know on a cosmic scale. It can make you more comfortable with uncertainty in other parts of life, right?
Yeah.
Less need for absolute certainty when you realize the universe itself is mostly mystery.
That makes sense. Dealing with ambiguity. What else?
The timescale thing we touched on, thinking about Milkomeda forming in 4.5 billion years, gives you a dose of long-term perspective.
Right. Suddenly, today's crisis doesn't seem quite so all-encompassing.
Exactly. Yeah. It helps put things in context. Distinguish the urgent from the truly important, maybe.
Okay, humility perspective. Any others?
I'd say systems thinking. A galaxy isn't just a pile of stars. It's this complex interacting system.
With the stars, the gas, the black hole feedback loop, the dark matter scaffolding.
Yeah, all connected. Seeing how those parts influence each other, how the system self-regulates, that's a powerful model. It encourages you to look for those hidden connections and feedback loops in other complex systems like an economy or an ecosystem or even, you know, a team project at work.
That's a great point, seeing the interconnectedness. So the big shift really is seeing ourselves not just on Earth, but as part of this vast, dynamic, evolving structure, chemically linked to the stars themselves.
Absolutely. We are stardust living inside these incredible cosmic engines. And maybe the final thought to leave folks with is this. Knowing that the universe runs on two huge unknowns, maybe that should make us question how certain we are about the things we think we do know.
Always more to discover.
Always. The biggest breakthroughs often come from figuring out what we currently can't see or understand.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.